recorded.
Okay, so we continue with the very significant discussion surrounding a Ger Shomol V'lo Tavo, one who is in the process of conversion and has gone part of the way, has already undergone Milah, but has not yet had Tevilah. And what exactly is the status and the implications of being in that position? And it's a topic which has practical ramifications. It's not just a theoretical, like in Menachos Chinuch, kind of chatzi eved, chatzi v'charin, just to bring it up as a nafkamina. This is something that certainly has halachic ramifications. Asked by Reese from his experience, how much time it generally takes between the Mila and the Tevila, told me it's usually 2 to 4 weeks between those two. So if the toughest on bris, it's more 2 to 4 minutes, but if it's an actual bris Mila, then it takes 2 to 4 weeks to be ready for the Tevila. So that's a significant period of time where things could happen, where one could have various questions. And as we discussed yesterday, it was historically a big controversy, even though this should come up pretty often because it's 2 to 4 weeks. So you certainly have a Shabbos or two or three in the middle. And the question of Shmir Shabbos is a very practical one. And for whatever reason, it exploded in controversy at that specific moment in the 1800s, where it happened in Yerushalayim that Rav Asher Lemel was filling in for Shmuel Salant and instructed that the Shmir Shabbos was prohibited, and if Shmuel Salant later took a different position, and it erupted in controversy. But this is clearly something that comes up often enough. And we'll see also that some of the concepts that are involved in this discussion will also have broader relevance to other issues of Geirus. So it's a very important topic. So let's expand on that and basically take it from the beginning. So we know that somebody who has not finished the process, if he hasn't undergone Tevilah, so then Lamaisa, he's not Jewish. Gemara tells us in our Sugya and Yevamos, we're using that as the home base, that we need both. We need Mila and Tevilah. And without that, you're not considered to be a ger. And the Gemara also makes clear there that there's an opinion, we don't follow this opinion, but there is an opinion that a child from an Akum and a Jewish woman is a mamzer. So what's clear from the Gemara is that that's true even if the Akum is essentially a ger shemal v'lo tavo. So he still has that status of not being Jewish for the purpose of that din, which also seems to tell us that this individual is indeed not yet Jewish. And that's also even more clearly stated, it would seem, from the Gemara in the Maseches Brachos and Daf Mem Zayin, from the Sugyas of Zimun, where the Gemara says that we don't include a non-Jew in the Zimun. And the Gemara says, well, obviously we don't. What are you talking about? And the Gemara goes on to say, well, you might think maybe a ger shemal v'lo tavo, maybe that might be a different story. And the conclusion is, no, this individual is still a nachri, is still not Jewish, and therefore is not yet counted. So that would seem to be where we're coming from here, that the process isn't finished, and therefore this individual does not have the status of a Jew for all the relevant halachos. But we see nothing so simple, and this is a topic of major debate for a lot of reasons in a lot of areas. So one topic we mentioned yesterday was the question of maga yayin. If he touches wine, so then will he have a negative impact on that wine? Will that wine take on an isser status because he touches it? So just to take a step back, yesterday we started from the Shulchan Aruch, give you a little background. This is the Machlokas Rishonim. That Tosfos and the Rush and the Sechas of Avodah Zarah took the view that he does not offer the wine, while other Rishonim were more Machmir, such as the Ran and others, who took the view that indeed there is an Isser, and the Ran actually said, which is contradicted by some later sources, that he thinks it's actually worse than a ger toshav. And the Shulchan Aruch, who is machmer, Shulchan Aruch brings Ger Toshav and Mal Shlotaval in one category, and others disagree. But the Ran says that it's worse than a Ger Toshav, because the Ger Toshav has already accepted the policy of no Avodah Zarah, and the Ger Shemov Lotavol is not yet at the Tvila, so he hasn't yet done the Kabbalah HaMitzvah, so he's a step behind the Ger Toshav. Others saw the Kal V'chomer in the other direction, but the Maaseh was a Machlokas HaRishonim, comes out to be a Machlokas Shulchan Aruch, and so the Ramah, who reflects the Machlokas, and some of the Nosei Kalim. So this is a ongoing issue. Rav Nassim Geshvetner has a tshuva about this, and a tshuva for Harav Nassim, where he tends more to Chumrah as a baseline on this question. So that's an issue that has various implications to it, and various positions, and it could be that that has to do with alumnus of Yain. It could be that that's a Hilchos Avodah Zarah question, and maybe not so much a question of his personal status. But that's one of the issues that was disputed. And it's an issue which is very relevant because of the embrace of the community of the one who's in the Geirus process. So that becomes a practical issue, having over the house for Shabbos and for meals. And Shabbos, like we said, is an area where there was this huge machlokas and this huge controversy. So there were those who were machmir, who said that Ger Shmo V'lo Tovo is not allowed to keep Shabbos, that he is the category of a Benoach, category of an Akum, and therefore Shmir Shabbos is not yet for him. That was the view taken by Rabbi Kiva Eger and by the Menchus Elazar and by Rav Asher Lamo, who was the one who, in this famous controversy, gave this ruling. But we also see that there are many who disagree, and many who feel that at a minimum he is permitted to be Shomer Shabbos. So the question is, why would you say that? So there are a number of different explanations, and there are some which come from the premise that this individual is not Jewish in any sense of the word, but the fact that he has begun the Geirus process, that's a reason to allow Shmiras Shabbos. And that was the formulation that the Leiv Aryeh we mentioned yesterday had, just to make that reference. He bases it on the Maharsha. If you recall the Maharsha that we mentioned a few times, that when Hillel accepted the candidate who was a little sketchy as far as his motivation, and Tosus said because he trusted he would ultimately come around, and the Maharsha said, well, he didn't convert him right away, he just trained him further. So that Maharsha is relevant to the question of Talmud Torah during that stage. And there are a number who assume, Asher Weiss's discussion about this, and the Leiv Aryeh that we mentioned, that tells us that during the training process, Talmud Torah is mutter, and Shmir Shabbos can be understood also in the context of training. And that is therefore assuming that we're not necessarily giving any particular status of Jew to this individual, but that the nature of where he's holding as far as his willingness to embrace Judaism in the near future, that's enough reason to be making on this. And there are indications like this in Rishonim also, Tosfos Yeshanim and Yevamos, it sounds like that also, that just the readiness to be makabel the process of becoming a Jew is a reason to have a different attitude towards certain concepts. So Futner has a letter where he says something like that. That's an approach that you find in many places. Moshe Sternbach, in one of his tshuvas, and Rav Asher Weiss also, point to a shach that they think proves this point, that it's permissible for him to be Shomer Shabbos, at least permissible, because there is a shach in Hilchos Mila, that the shach says that one should not bemoal either a baby who is a bris shelo bezmano, the Mila shelo bezmano of a Jewish baby, or of a ger, says you shouldn't do the bris on Thursday. If it's an 8-day-old baby, so you have to do it, you do it even on Yom Kippur. But if it's not an 8-day-old baby, so then you shouldn't do the bris on a Thursday, because it'll come out that the most dangerous third day is going to be Shabbos, and that could lead to Chil Shabbos. The Shach quotes this from the Tashbetz. So these Achronim point out to Shtarnbuch and Vashuais that why is that a concern? So if we're talking here about you'll have the Mila on a Thursday, so you're not going to have the Tefillah before Shabbos. So why are we worried then that he may be in a position he'll have to be Mechal Shabbos? He's not obligated to keep Shabbos anyway. He's not allowed to keep Shabbos, you might think. So why should we make this policy in order to save him from Chil Shabbos? Chil Shabbos isn't a problem. So they take that as a proof that apparently he is at least at a minimum allowed to be Shomer Shabbos. And if he wants to be Shomer Shabbos, so therefore we have to help him by not putting him in this position of potential compromise because of the sakana that that would unnecessarily bring about. So Rav Sternbach in his Chuvas, this is in Chelik Gimel of his Chuvas, Chuvas von Hagos, so he writes to explain, he says, why is this? So why should we have this attitude of heter in this case? So he notes, very interestingly, and I think this is relevant to the point that Aryeh brought up yesterday, that the very fact that he's having the Mila already, so that shows you something. That shows you that the Mila is Betoras Yisrael. Because if he wasn't performing mitzvahs on a Jewish plane at all, so then he'd be no better than an Arab who had had a circumcision like the custom is. So we see what we saw yesterday. We talked about that whole question of males who are not in the parasha of Mila right now for various reasons. So one of them was that if you have an individual who was already circumcised for other reasons other than Judaism before this, that presents a question that that person may be considered an RL even if he's physically circumcised. So if a ger at that point is no different than a non-Jew, so that would seem to leave him in a complicated status. Now, in a chanami, that would call into question the whole process of geirus, and then call into question why don't we do the meal at a different time, and again, I think that was the point that Aryeh was making yesterday. But what emerges from that is that there are certain mitzvos that are already being practiced on behalf of his Jewish self, on behalf of his plan towards Judaism. So this is a Jewish mila happening for this person, and apparently certain mitzvos can already be performed in that stage. And therefore, one could apply that to Shabbos as well. And he associates that specifically with the Rambam's formulation of the Isser Shmir Shabbos for Ben Noach, which itself is a whole complicated topic. But the way the Rambam formulates language, so he uses that also to fit into this theory, especially the same way he can do the Amila on behalf of his future Judaism, so too he could be Shomer Shabbos on behalf of his future Judaism also. Tyler?
Yeah, I don't know if you went over the Gemara and Shabbos yet very well on Kaplamet Hay and also the Ram. Or are we going to do that? Or
we're going to mention it a little bit, yeah.
Not yet, we didn't do it yet.
Yeah, no, not yet, but we will, we'll get to that a little bit more, and then we'll mention different Gemara and Shabbos today. But we'll get to that, God willing. So another point that the Binyan Tzion mentions, we mentioned yesterday that the Binyan Tzion of Yaakov Ettlinger was one of those who was consulted at the time of the whole controversy with Rav Shmuel Salant, and he wrote the tshuva, and the tshuva was printed at the time, was also printed in the tshuva's Binyan Tzion, and was also a big part of this controversy. So the Binyan Tzion was makel for a number of reasons, and among them, like we said at the outset, you know, this is something that comes up all the time. It's not something that is hypothetical or theoretical. It's going to happen always in every male gerus if there is a need to wait a few weeks between the Mila and the Tevila, so then you're always going to have more than one Shabbos in between. So if it's the case that we have to tell this individual to make sure not to keep Shabbos, so then that would be something we would know about. So he writes that he looked into all the places that they do Geirus, and no one tells them that this is what they do, that they make this insistence. So that's one reason he says that it doesn't seem to be that that's a necessary policy. But he also makes note of the fact that if, as Chazal tell us, that Shabbos was already given at Mara, so Mara was before Klal Yisrael had Tevilah, so therefore that's already permissible to have Shmira Shabbos before the Tevilah stage. He brings that as another proof for Hetzer. Now, there's a whole discussion. The Asher Weiss in the Sefer on Bereishis points out some of the back and forth about this, as to whether they were taught about Shabbos or they were given a commandment of Shabbos at Mara. There's some back and forth as far as that's concerned. And one issue to also address is that maybe that would lead one to say that one is not only allowed to keep Shabbos, maybe one is obligated to keep Shabbos if you're following the path of history. So if the Jews were obligated to keep Shabbos before Tevilah, so then maybe also a contemporary Ger is obligated to keep Shabbos before Tevilah. So that's something that some of the Achronim did indeed push, did indeed suggest, and that's one that was heavily disputed by others. That's another level here. It's another phase in the whole discussion. So, in any event, that's one way to look at this. So, if you want to say that it's mutter for the Ger Shemal V'lo Tavo to keep Shabbos, so we could say that because he's at that stage, without saying anything more about his personal status, but because he has accepted the process, because he's begun the process, because it's necessary education, all of that is a reason to allow it. And there are a few extra points here of something specific to Shabbos, whether it's a Mara or something related, that maybe Shabbos all the more so, there's a reason to say that even before Tevilah, there is a involvement in that. Tyler?
Yes, sir. What was the first reason? Something that comes up all the time? What did you say?
We're saying that it's a practical point. This is not a hypothetical. So in every male Geirus, you're going to have this question. So the Binyan Siyan wrote that this is something which he looked into, and he talked about the din that did Geirus, and none of them told him that this is a policy that they maintain. So it doesn't seem like that's the din. So then he goes on to explain why he thinks it's not the din. But his point being that we wouldn't not know about it if this was really a kpeda. It's not just theoretical. It's something that would have been put into practice all around the world. And that's how what we see is that there's clearly different opinions about this, and they clearly are different practices as far as this is concerned, and one Beis Din may have a different policy than the other. But that was his empirical observation, that this is something that's not happening, and therefore it's probably for a reason, and that's what he's going on to explain. So this is one whole plane to say that Ger is still not yet a Ger, he's not Jewish, but there are reasons to have a different attitude towards the Shmira Shabbos. We'll essentially give us two views so far. We have those who are Machmir, who say that you can't be Shomer Shabbos, like the B'kiva Eger in the Minchas Elazar and Rav Shlomo, and those who say he can for reasons that just have to do with the training and the status of his acceptance, but don't change his personal status in any way. However, there are others that go further, and there are others who say the reason that he is allowed to keep Shabbos at a minimum is because even though his conversion is not finished and he hasn't actually taken on Judaism, but he is still no longer an Akum. Or he has separated from that state of Avodas Kochavim. And therefore, this Isser, which should be associated under this assumption specifically with a Ove Kochavim, is given to more flexibility. And some point to Tosus Increases on Daf Tesamid Aleph, which has that phrasing. I'll read it to you. I didn't put it on today's Makaris. I can give you some Makaris so you're aware. Take a quick look. So, post it to increase the sun dot test. Talks about the idea of Mila historically as part of the Geirus process. And Tosu says, Perish Shemolo, Atzma, Biyatiyatim, and Mitzrayim. So they had the Mila when they left Mitzrayim. Vyacha, Alpisha, Osum, Shahayu, Nimolo, and Avram, Lo Molo, Osam, Biyatiyat, Mitzrayim. There were those who had a Mila from before. Mikol Makom, Ikara, Kishamolo, Atman. Here's the key words. Molo, Likanes, Vibris, Hamakom, Vilibadel, Mishar, Umos. Gam, Kiyasa, Tavlu. So, the Mila that they had earlier has the same purpose, to separate them from other nations. So some point to this and say that that's what the Mila accomplishes, and that's the point that we discussed yesterday, right? That even if we say that Mila and Tvila are not equal parts of the process here, they're not equal partners, and Mila is just something that has to happen before the Tvila, but maybe still it does accomplish this, that maybe it takes them out of the status of Ovdei Kochavim, and therefore, for that reason, that could lead to a different attitude. And Rav Asher, in his essay, in the Sefer Al HaTorah, in Sefer Bereishis, so he adopts a view like this. He makes reference to this Tosus and Krisus, and he has a language, which you have to figure out exactly what its implications are, but he basically says, Yatza Miklal Gai B'miza Misuyamis. To some degree, whatever that means, but even if he's not Jewish, and we see that for many halachos, most halachos, he's not Jewish, you can't count him to a minion and the like, as he emphasizes there, but to a certain degree, he has left the status of non-Jew, and that's going to have implications, and this is one of them. Many also point to a tshuva of the Rabbaz, which also seems to have that phrasing. And the question is whether, or not the exact language, but the question of whether the point is that he's not anymore an Akum, or is it more than that, that he's a shtickle a Jew? That's the way the Or Sameach understood it, that because he sees this as two halves of the process, so if you've gone through half, so you're not a full Jew, but you're a little bit of a Jew. You know, one of the things that we'll see, I remember when I started to learn a little bit more about Geirus, I wanted to go back to my elementary school Rebbeim and argue with them, because he used to teach us, you know, there's no such thing as half a Jew. So what they mean is that in contemporary society, so if you have somebody of mixed lineage, let's say he has one Jewish parent and one non-Jewish parent, so they'll say he's half Jewish. And Alpi halacha, so we don't look at it that way. We look at only one side of the lineage. So we assume that the religion comes from the mother. So if the mother is Jewish, doesn't matter whether the father is or isn't. And if the mother is not Jewish, also doesn't matter whether the father is or isn't. So we don't say you're half Jewish because half of your lineage is Jewish or half isn't. So we used to say there's no such thing as half a Jew because they were refuting that position. But one thing that you'll see in some of the lumdus in Geirus, and it'll come up in some other cases also, that is not so clear that there's no such thing as a half a Jew. That we'll see part of what emerges from today's discussion, and we'll see this in a few other places in Hilchos Geirus, that there's some other triggers for such a position, that could be there is such a thing as a half a Jew. It could be that there is an intermediate position. So it's still not based on whether you have half of your ancestors one way and half of your ancestors the other way. Like we talk about other kind of ancestry. Somebody is half French and half Greek, so that's one thing. But to say you're half Jewish based on your ancestry, okay, so that doesn't apply. But there are ways where maybe there is such a thing as being in between. The Dovid Meisharim, the Shabin Arav, the great Gon, he, in his Shuvis, he has it also coming from the Radaz, but the way he understands it is that essentially you're somewhat, for some purposes, accorded some of the dinim of being Jewish because at this point you're committed and it's just a matter of time. And you find that in other contexts as well. Let's say, for example, a katan is pater from mitzvos, but some of the Rishonim seems to suggest that a katan, to some extent, can be motzi a gadol in mitzvos, even though that shouldn't be. If you're not obligated, you can't be motzi anyone else. So why should a katan be different? So some explain that when you're basically on the way and it's a matter of time, so then we do look to the future and we give you that status. It's not the same thing as being completely exempt from something. The difference between being exempt and being likely to be obligated in the future. So too, the fact that this individual is on the way, so that should give him a status comparable to a katan. He's in the pasha. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he suggests that maybe there's one specific status that we can give this individual because he's had at least the bris, so we could call him a ben bris, baal bris, which is sometimes we find that in halacha. Usually we mean it as a synonym for a Jew, but maybe it could be even more specific and say, even if it doesn't necessarily describe a Jew fully, but somebody who at least is in the covenant. And that could have nafkaminas. The Chassam Sofer talks about shlichus, because the Gemara uses the phrase in that way, that somebody needs to be a part of a covenant to be a valid shliach. And maybe it has other implications. There's a sefer called Sefer HaBris. It's written by Moshe Bunim Piratinsky, Zuchana Lebracha and Hilchas Mila. And I have a special fondness for the sefer because he was a mo'el at my bris. So to express special confidence in the sefer. So the Sefer HaBris suggests, based on this Chassam Sofer, that maybe a ger shemo v'lo tavo can give a bris to other people. Because he's a ben bris, he's in the parsha of the bris, even if he's not a Jew, but we wouldn't necessarily treat him as a non-Jew either for this purpose. It wouldn't be like hiring a non-Jewish mole. Maybe there's somebody who is a ben bris as far as this is concerned. So that's another way of phrasing it. Rav Shmuel Salant, who was a major player here, he was the one who left town at the wrong moment and allowed this controversy to erupt and then got involved and took the other position. So he expressed the position that he is certainly allowed to keep Shabbos and perhaps even obligated to keep Shabbos, because he also seems to understand that there is a somewhat of a Jewish status for this individual. And a raya that he focused on was a Rashba. The Rashba in Yevamos on Daf Ayin Beis, that there the Gemara excludes, based on a pasuk, the Gemara excludes the ger shemal v'lo taval from Karban Pesach. So the Rashba over there raises the question that why should I need a pasuk to tell me that he's not a part of Korban Pesach? We know already, Kol Ben Necher, a non-Jew, is already excluded from Korban Pesach. So if this individual is not Jewish yet, so then, okay, from the Mela, that's the din. So the Rashba has a language that maybe he is already, because he's taken the step of the bris, he's already left his previous religion and entered a little bit into the Das Yehudis, into the Jewish religion. And Shmuel Salant, in his interpretation of this Rashba, which was disputed for a lot of reasons, many who wrote at the time didn't accept his reading of this Rashba, but the way Shmuel Salant understands it is that essentially at this phase, this really has at least major conceptual implications for this whole process, is that this individual has essentially become a Jew tentatively, that he has started his trip towards Judaism, and it's reversible, because until he has the tevila, so then he can pull out, as opposed to a ger who is fully converted, so we assume it's not reversible. And if a ger abandons Judaism after he converts, he's considered to be, like we saw in the first week, he's considered to be a Jew who is sinning, which is why it's bad advice for him. But before the tevila, he can pull out. So it's reversible, but he's tentatively started his Jewish path, And it'll be the Mafreya. It'll be retroactively established once he has the tefillah that he was Jewish throughout. That's a big chiddush. And there were many who argued on Rav Shmuel Salant about this, among them Rav Asher Lemel, the big player who was the one who started the controversy by ruling that he can't be Shomer Shabbos. And he said that Rashba, the Havamina, the Rashba was explaining why the Gemara needs a pasuk. It's not telling us a conclusion that that's actually the case. The Gemara is just telling us why we need more education to know that the Ger Shema V'lo Taval is not part of the Karban Pesach. But it doesn't mean, well, Maskana, that he actually has a different status. So that's a big discussion, and there were many who wrote to take a different understanding of this. Tyler.
In the case, we said that if he did the Mila first, he can still pull out. So what's the case if he did Tevila first? What do you say on that?
So that's an interesting question. So does Tevila have any impact? So that I think I want to save till we get to Tevila, but there is an interesting Chalkas Yoav about that. We'll get to that. And so what if you have all this discussion about just Mila? What status does that give you? So is there any status that just Tevila gives you? Especially in light of the fact that Tevila is normally done after Mila, but if it isn't, we saw yesterday a Machlok is what that is, so that let's discuss separately, but there is some fascinating questions to be looked at over there. How practical they are is a question, but it's an interesting discussion that we'll have. So here we have a whole debate about how far to go with this, and we see different phases here that either he's certainly not Jewish, but he's allowed to be Shomer Shabbos and the like for various reasons, or he's allowed to be Shomer Shabbos because he has left the status of Akum, or maybe it's even more than that, maybe he is already on some level partially Jewish, and therefore that creates a different status. My friend, I mentioned yesterday, Rabbi David Gottlieb, Rebbe in Har Etzion, so he has a sefer, a Taras Yaakov, where he has a very thorough discussion about this. It's a very nice discussion. It's two pieces. So one piece is on Mila by Gerim that we referenced yesterday, and then he has a whole other essay, very thorough essay on this topic of Ger Shemal V'lo Tavo. And he notes that he could suggest that this Machlokis maybe is Machlokis Hatsugias, perhaps, or if you don't want to go that far, but just the Gemaras have slightly different language, or maybe significantly different language. Because the Gemara in Yevamos has the language of that until he is Tovel, Eino Ger. So he is not yet a convert. But the language of the Gemara in Maseches Brachos that has the statements about not being Mezamin with a Mal Shlo Tavo. So it says, until he has Tevila, Nachrihu. So that's essentially the different perspectives that you're seeing in some of these achronim, is the idea that he is still a nachri, still non-Jewish fully, or maybe not. Maybe he's not a nachri, but ain't no ger. He's not necessarily Jewish yet. So we know he's some level short of a full convert. So is it just that he's not a ger, but he's somewhere in between, and that has significance? Or is he still a nachri? So the fact that the Gemaras have different language, that may also be significant. It is very significant for a lot of reasons, this issue, because the whole question of partial Judaism and its implications has major, major impact on different things. And we'll discuss later, there's an often quoted Chiddush of the Gainat, Rav Naftali Trop, Shivan Radin, who distinguishes between the Shem Yisrael and Kedushas Yisrael. And that may also be a relevant distinction here. But there were some Achronim who assumed that for the purposes of Tfisas Kedushin, that all one needs to do is leave the status of Nachri, even if they haven't fully taken on the status of Jewish. To figure out whether this is exactly the position or not. But there are some Svarim who have taken the position that so if you have someone in this position and they marry a Jewish woman, let's say, so that would be a valid Kedushin. and would need a get to be dissolved. So if it became a controversy later, let's say there was a contested divorce, and the get wasn't forthcoming, so you may be able to say, well, it's okay because the husband's not Jewish anyway, so there's no need for get. It was intermarriage. So there are some who say, not so fast. That maybe if you have the status of just Mila, that might be enough for Tfisas Kedushin. So that's very significant because, yes, we said it comes up. You have a few weeks in between the Mila and the Tfila, but those who are advocating this position are saying more than that. They're saying, even if you have a Geirus, which is beyond Tfila, but it's questionable for a lot of reasons, for Kabbalah's HaMitzvot issues or Bezdin issues, but it may still be that there may still be a Tfisas Kedushin. And therefore, there may be a requirement for a get nonetheless, which could be a very significant chumra if there's a contested situation. So this is something which we'll have to look at the practicalities of in the future. Maybe I'll ask Baris to talk about this, because he has a lot to say about the practicalities. But not just the Gershom Alvalo Tavo, but other situations where the Gerus is questionable or in between for other reasons, maybe there still might be a actual Tfisas Kedushin, and that may impact things. So that's a concern we have to leave space for it to ultimately take a look at. It's noteworthy that Rav Sternbuch in his tshuva, so he says the opposite. Rav Sternbuch says that you can keep Shabbos as a Gershom Alvalo Tavo because you're already performing certain things as a Jew. So then, what about the fact that we started with the Gemara in Yevamos that makes clear he's not Jewish and says that according to the opinion that an Akum and a Jewish woman who have a child together is a mamzer, that applies even to a Gershom Alvalo Tavo? Doesn't that show you he's not Jewish? So says Rav Sternbuch, says, no, not necessarily. Because that's about Tfisas Kedushin, that the Mamzerus comes from the fact that there is no halachic marriage permissible between the two. It doesn't necessarily tell you more than that. But you see, his premise is that Davka, there is no Tfisas Kedushin between a Gershom Alvalo Tavo and a Jew, while others are apparently taking the opposite approach, and it's something which could have major halachic ramifications. So that's also something that to think about. But to close with, just mention one other tshuva that Sternbuch, this is the same tshuva of Sternbuch, has a few tshuvas about this in the Chelek Gimel and in the Chelek Zayin of his tshuvas von Helgos. But just to close for today, he has a tshuva that gives us some synergy. Now we're excited about synergy, so which mentioned 2 points of synergy. First of all, today's Daf Yomi, if I'm not mistaken, is Kuf Lamid Beis in Shabbos. And that's one of the sources that the concept of bris is an oath. So that was also one of the points that the Binyan Tzion made, that we should let the Gershom Alvalo Tavo be Shomer Shabbos, because bris is an oath and Shabbos is an oath. So he said it doesn't make sense to say that he's taken on one oath, but he's excluded from the other oath. That doesn't seem to flow. If you're ready in one oath, you should be able to take on the other oath as well. Okay, so that was synergy from today's Daf Yomi. But here's synergy from the Parsha, from Parsha's Matos. It's a very fascinating shaila that Rav Sternbuch considers. So let's say you have the following scenario. You have a married couple who is converting together to Judaism. And so the husband and wife are both converting. So the wife has finished the conversion. She has had her tevilah. But the husband, because he had to have the milah first and he has to heal from the milah, so he hasn't had the tevilah yet. He has had the milah below tevilah. And guess what happened in between? So the wife went and was tovil their kelim. Right, that's a mitzvah from this week's parsha, to be tovel kalim that one acquires from a non-Jew. So, being that the kalim are also owned by the husband, and the husband is not yet Jewish, so was this tefilas kalim effective? The tefilas kalim that was done by the wife for their jointly owned kalim, so So is that effective, being that her husband is still in the status of Malvolo Tavos? Gvaldika synergy for this week's Parsha. Great, great topic for Parsha's Matos. So what do you think? So does that work? So, yeah, Shlomo?
Let's say you just told all them after again without a bracha.
Well, yeah, you can always do that, but that's a cop-out. We want to know the, you know, that's not going to make this question so interesting. So, does it work or not? We've got to figure it out. So, the way Rish Sternbach addresses it, he says that the whole lumdus, he's assuming, which is a discussion in itself, of Tilas Kalim, which really does perhaps have a strong parallel to Geiris, and we mentioned that yesterday or the day before, that the Ritva invokes that to explain why Mila is supposed to be before Tevila, comparing it to Tevilas Kalim. So here now to look at Ashayla actually in Tevilas Kalim and to work from its comparison to Geiris, so the idea of Tevilas Kalim is to take it from the Akum history and to bring it into Kedushas Yisrael. So here, so if we say that he has left the status of Akum, so how much does that help us for this purpose? So it helps us as if he bought Kalim at that time. So let's say while he's waiting to heal from his Mila and he's anticipating the Tevila, decides to go shopping and they buy some Kalim. So there he's comfortable saying that that's not Chayiv in Tevila because that's not Kalim that, or let's say he made the Kalim then. So there, that's those are not Kalim that were made by a non-Jew because he has Kedushas Yisrael enough that he's not an Akum, at least he's separated from an Akum. But it's not really what we're talking about. What we're talking about is the Kalim that he owned from before this. Right. So there is a discussion in Poskim, which we'll get to towards the end. We'll talk about some of the other shilas of that relate to Geirin beyond the process. That's for the end of our time. So one of the questions that comes up is a ger obligated to be tovel his own kalim, the kalim that he owned from before his gerus? So is that equivalent to having acquired those kalim from a non-Jew, from himself, the previous version of himself? And now, as he's a Jew, should he have to be tovel the kalim? So that's the context that we're talking about, the kalim that he had beforehand. So it shouldn't help the fact when he got them, he wasn't even a ger shemal v'lo tovel. Then he wasn't a ger at all. So the question that we're asking now is not, did it come from Akum? Because it did come from Akum. But the question is the tevila that happened at his in-between stage, can that be effective? Should we say that, no, it's not effective because it has to be nichnas l'Yisrael, and he's not a Yisrael yet? Or is there room to be more mekel? So ultimately, says matter of practice, he thinks he could be mekel because it says that it is a machlokes about whether he has to have the tefilas kalim in the first place. The whole obligation of tefilas kalim for a ger is a machlokes. He happens to believe that he is obligated. He has shuvas elsewhere where he makes that position that he is obligated, but it is a matter of machlokes. So therefore, Shlomo, the ger should be tovel without a bracha in general. That should be the policy of redoing his own kalim. Separate from this, it's a whole machlokes. It's very unclear whether tefilas kalim b'zman hazeh is daraisa d'rabbanan. We'll read about it in this week's parsha, so it's daraisa, but the question of whether that was in that context only or whether that applies to our contemporary kalim is a big machlokes, whether it continues to be a mitzvah daraisa or not. So there's a lot of subtleties within tefilas kalim. But in any event, it's a machlokas whether he's chayiv. So he says, b'tziruf, the fact that it's a machlokas if he's chayiv in the first place, so the suffix about the shayla we could be mekel on. We could say that it doesn't have to, we can rely on this tefillah that happened for his kalim when he's in the twilight zone, because it's a machlokas whether the tefillah was necessary in the first place. But I thought it was a very geshmak shayla, which gives us the synergy of the parsha, so we couldn't close today's discussion without mentioning that. So I'll just quickly recap what we spoke about, and then God willing, we still have Hilchos Mila to talk about, so we'll have to other aspects of Hilchos Mila, so we'll still pick up with that on Monday, and then hopefully soon segue into issues of Tevila and some of the practicalities of that for the rest of the week. So just to quickly recap, we spoke about, so it sounds like from explicit Gemaras that a ger shemavel otavel is not yet a ger, is not Jewish, and you would think that that should impact all halachas, but we found some reasons to have a safek about certain things. So we saw that yayin is a machlokas, machlokas lemaisa, machlokas among Rishonim, machlokas mishulchan aruch. We saw that Shabbos was a big machlokas, even though it comes up all the time, but was a big controversy in the 1800s, and it continues to be a back-and-forth machlokas. And we saw various ways to look at it, either to say that it's also important to keep Shabbos, or to say that it's mutter. Why should it be mutter? So there were at least three different broad ways to look at that, each one having its own subdivision. Either he's not Jewish at all, but the stage of Geirus is one that justifies this specifically for various reasons. Or he has left the status of Aklam, and that has an impact. Or maybe more than that, maybe he is a shtickle Jewish, at least for these purposes, and that justifies and maybe even obligates Shemira Shabbos as far as that's concerned. And we noted that beyond this, it impacts a few other halachos as well, and perhaps most significantly is the question of marriage, that there were those who asserted that he's Jewish enough or non-Jewish enough that there is a tefisas kedushin, and that could have major ramifications, that if he would marry a Jewish woman, there would be a requirement for a get afterwards. And that's a subject we'll have to leave open for future discussions. And then we ended on this point of synergy, the question of Tevilas Kalim, and this couple where the woman who's finished the process was told that they're a joint Kalim and the man is still a Gersh of Malvolo Tabo, so could the Tevilas Kalim count? And we saw Rav Sternberg Shuva where he saw this as a question of the Kalim leaving Akum and going into Kedushas Yisrael. Where exactly does that graph onto this man's individual experience? And his conclusion was, because the whole question of whether he has to be Tovel, his own Kalim, is itself a machlokas to begin with. Okay, so I will wish you a safe and healthy and wonderful Shabbos. And God willing, we look forward to picking things up on Monday.
Thank you.
Should be only good things.